Hey, how's everybody doing today? Hotep. Hey, this is Michael M. Hotep, host of the African History Network show, founder of the African History Network. I'm a talk show host, researcher, lecturer, and writer. Today is Thursday, March 29th, 2018. And we are live, and we should be on Facebook Live right now on our Facebook fan page, The African History Network, The African History. All right, so I've been meaning to talk about this story for 2 weeks now. It's been very, very busy. But it's a story about National Geographic. And this deals with their April issue, April 2018 issue of National Geographic, is dedicated to the concept of race, understanding the concept of race. They talk about racism as well. And they also reckon with their past history of what they describe as racist coverage of non-European people. Okay, so I want to talk about this. It's a lot of history here. We'll talk a little bit about the online lecture I'm doing Saturday, March 31st, at our online school, the African History Network School, dealing with the film Black Panther, analysis of the film Black Panther, the cultural influence, African history, things like this, okay? And you can register for that at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. All right, I'm going to post the information here for the broadcast and pin it. All right, so we'll talk about that, and then also we'll talk some about my appearance in Baltimore. Saturday, April 7th, Sunday, April 8th at the Baltimore Natural Hair Care Expo. Okay, so you may have seen some coverage about this. I know NPR.org had a big article about this. I've seen news stories about the April issue of National Geographic. And some of you saw the image they have of the white girl and African-American girl who are both twins. Okay, they're both twins. They're twins, and you can see it here. And it says, this is the cover of their issue, April issue. And it talks about how these two girls who are twins, says black and white, these twin sisters make us rethink everything we know about race. Okay. And you've heard me talk about the concept of race before, and you have to understand history as well. The concept of race has not always existed. Racism has not always existed. Racism is a system of advantage and privilege distributed based upon race, which comes out of the ideology of European white supremacy. Racism occurs when one race of people control the majority of the wealth, power, resources, benefits, privileges, land, access to education, access to opportunity, wealth, etc., healthcare, and they use that to marginalize, subordinate, do harm to another race of people. Okay, that's what racism is. The concept of race is the stratification of humanity into different quote-unquote groups based upon a concept called race that largely evolves in the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries. And you have people like Dr. Johann Friedrich Blumenbach, who in 1779 coined the term Caucasian. You have people like Dr. Carl von Linnaeus. And Linnaeus is going to stratify humanity into races and then attach moral and ethical and intellectual attributes to these races based upon no scientific evidence, based upon no scientific data, which reinforces a lot of stereotypes about African people, et cetera. Okay. So when we look at the, and the concept of racism is designed to preserve genetic white survival on the planet that's less than 10% European. So when we look at the article from National Geographic called when we look at the article from NPR.org, National Public Radio, called National Geographic Reckons with Its Past. For decades, our coverage was racist. For decades, our coverage was racist. Now, it's important to understand that National Geographic started publishing in 1888. Okay, 1888, they first started publishing their magazine. And currently, according to the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com, currently National Geographic can be found in 172 countries, and it's translated into 43 languages each month. It's in 172 countries each month and translated into 43 languages. All right. So when we look at the article from NPR.org, National Geographic reckons with its past. For decades, our coverage was racist. It says that if National Geographic's April 2018 issue was going to be entirely devoted to the subject of race, the magazine decided it had better take a good hard look at its own history. So the editor-in-chief at National Geographic, her name is Susan Goldberg, Susan Goldberg, and she asked historian John Edwin Mason, who's a professor of African history and the history of photography at the University of Virginia, to dive into the National Geographic's nearly 130-year archives and report back on what he found. So what historian John Edwin Mason found, Professor John Edwin Mason found, was a long tradition of racism in the magazine's coverage, in its text, TEXT, its choice of subjects, and in its famed photography. Its famed photography. So, editor-in-chief Susan Goldberg said in the April 2018 issue of National Geographic, in the editor in the editor's letter, she said, quote, "Until the 1970s, National Geographic all but ignored people of color who lived in the United States, rarely acknowledging them beyond laborers or domestic workers. Meanwhile, it pictured natives, quote unquote, natives elsewhere as exotics, famously and frequently unclothed, happy hunters, noble savages, every type of cliche," end quote. Now, unlike magazines such as Life magazine, quote, "National Geographic did little to push its readers beyond the stereotypes ingrained in white American culture," editor-in-chief Susan Goldberg went on to say. And she noted that she is the first woman and first Jewish person to have that position of editor-in-chief of National Geographic. Okay. And she said, quote, "Two groups that also once faced discrimination here," end quote, referring to here in America. She's referring to Jews and women. Now, to assess the magazine's coverage historically, historian and professor of African American studies John Edwin Mason delved into old issues and read a couple of key critical studies. He also pored over photographers' contact sheets, giving him a view of not just the photos that made it into print that we saw in the National Geographic magazines year after year, but also the decisions of that photographers and editors made. Also, the decisions that the photographers and editors made. Because if you know anybody, many of you watching, you've been models before. You may be photographers, you know models, right? When you go do a photo shoot and take pictures, usually you don't publish all the pictures you've taken. You may only publish 10%, 20%, 30% of the pictures you've taken. How do you decide which pictures to publish? But National Geographic has been around since 1888. First photographic camera wasn't available till the 1830s. It's called a daguerreotype. Okay. So how did they decide which pictures to publish and which pictures not to publish? All right. So, history professor, John Edwin Mason saw a number of problematic themes that emerge. A number of problematic themes that emerge, okay? And this is why understanding racism as a system, as Dr. Francis Crest Welsing correctly taught us, as Nellie Fuller correctly taught us, as people like Dr. Claude Anderson and others, Dr. Linda Jeffries, understanding it as a system is so important. Because, see, you have a lot of people who try to say, well, racism is calling people racial epithets and calling people all their names and calling people the N-word and things like this. That's bigotry. Racism is a power structure. So to understand the formation of that power structure and how it works, you have to understand history. Okay. All right. How's everybody doing today? We're going to continue here. Hey, everybody, share this broadcast on your own Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in also. Okay. Share this broadcast on your own Facebook page and invite your friends to tune in as well. All right. And then also, we'll talk some about the online class I'm doing Saturday, March 31st. Saturday, March 31st, 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. Sorry, 2 p.m. to 1 p.m. No, hell no, it's not 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. 2 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, dealing with the film Black Panther, okay? And it's going to be really good. It's analysis of the film. It's only $10 to register. We'll post the information here. You can register at the link we just posted or at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. And we also have a 6-course online bundle pack, a 6 of my online courses. If you register for that 6-course online bundle pack, it automatically registers you for the Black Panther online class as well. And all these you can watch over and over again. Okay, there's no limit. All right, so we'll come to some of your comments here in just a minute here also, okay? All right, so to assess the magazine, National Geographic magazine's coverage historically, Professor John Edwin Mason delved into old issues and read a couple of key critical studies. He also pored over photographers' contact sheets, giving him a view of just of not just the photos that made it into print, but also the decisions or the decision-making process that the photographers and editors went through to determine which photos make it into the magazine. So he saw a number of problematic themes, okay? He said, quote, the photography, like the articles, didn't simply emphasize difference. The photography, like the articles, did not simply emphasize difference, but the photography, like the articles, made difference very exotic, very strange, and put difference into a hierarchy. Okay? So the photography and the articles, they did not just simply emphasize difference. They defined basically difference as being very exotic, very strange, and they put the differences that they show based upon photography and articles, they put it based upon a hierarchy. Okay. He said, quote, and that hierarchy was very clear that the West, and especially the English speaking world, was at the top of the hierarchy. And Black and brown people were somewhere underneath. End quote. Now, for much of its history, now, just quickly, when we understand the stratification of race by people like Dr. Carl von Linnaeus and Dr. Johann Friedrich Blumenbach and others, they put race in a hierarchy, and they put the races in a hierarchy, and they put Caucasians or Europeans at the top, and they put Afrikoid people or African people, quote unquote, Negroes, or you may see them represented as Ethiopians, referring to Africans in general, depending upon the time period. They put them at the bottom of a hierarchy. And this is what, since 1888, National Geographic has largely been reflecting. So the article goes on to say, for much of its history, the pages of National Geographic depicted the Western world as dynamic, forward moving, and very rational. Forward moving, technology, views, things like this, moving into the future. For much of its history, the pages of National Geographic depicted the Western world as dynamic, forward moving, and very rational. Meanwhile, Professor John Edward Mason says, quote, the black and brown world was primitive and backwards and generally unchanging, end quote. But it was African people who created technology. It's African people who are laying the who laid the foundations for the technological advances that the West are using. It's African people who had the first university. Even when you study Europe, the first university in Europe, the University of Salamanca in Spain, built around 1285 AD, is built by African Moors and Arabs. And these first universities in Europe, University of Toledo, University of Bologna, Cambridge University, Salamanca, these first universities were studying the Moorish science text, the Moorish science text. They were studying the teachings that the African Moors took into Europe. And these are teachings coming from the Nile Valley region of Africa. These are teachings coming especially from ancient Kemet, ancient Egypt. And these Africans are taking these teachings into Europe. Now, one trope, T-R-O-P-1-E, one trope that Professor Mason noticed time and time again was that photographs show Native people apparently fascinated by Western technology. Photographs show Native people fascinated by Western technology. And what this does is this depicts Westerners, largely Europeans, as being so brilliant, so scientifically inclined. And it shows the quote unquote Native people as being lost in the Stone Age of somewhere. They're in the previous century. He said, quote, it's not simply that cameras and jeeps and airplanes are present. It's the people of color looking at this technology in amusement or bewilderment. Now, the article goes on to say that the implication was that Western readers would find humor in such fascination with their everyday goods. Then there's how the magazine chose its subject matter. So Professor Mason, professor of African-American history, explains that the National Geographic magazine had an explicit editorial policy of, quote unquote, nothing unpleasant, nothing unpleasant. So readers rarely saw war, rarely saw famine or civic conflict. So Professor Mason points to an article on South Africa from the early 1960s. That barely mentions the Sharpeville massacre in which 69 black South Africans were killed by police. Okay? Now, if you saw my podcast from a couple of days ago, you saw a Facebook Live broadcast from a couple of days ago, you know that we talked about the Sharpeville. We talked about the Sharpeville massacre. There was an article from Face to Face Africa. FaceToFaceAfrica.com, which is one of the African news websites I monitor on a daily basis, they had an article about this. 69 black South Africans were killed during the infamous 1960 Sharpeville massacre. Okay? This is in 1960. This is during apartheid in South Africa. Very little talk about this, however, in National Geographic magazine. We're going to post a link to the article from FaceToFaceAfrica.com for you to check out. We posted that here on the thread of the broadcast. And we'll post this in on an online school also for this broadcast as well. All right. Okay, so let's continue here. And I'll show you this picture here in just a second. So he points to an article on South Africa from the early 1960s that barely mentions the Sharpeville massacre, in which 69 black South Africans were killed by police. Okay. And He said, quote, there are no voices of Black South Africans. That absence is as important as what is in there. The only black people are doing exotic dances, servants or workers. Okay, so he's talking about when they talk about South Africa, they just show you images of the Zulu doing dances. African people doing exotic dances or servants or workers. They're not talking about the oppressive conditions that they're living under. He said it's bizarre actually to consider what the editors, writers, and photographers had to consciously not see. Okay, so let's flip over here and let's look at this picture. And when I teach my online courses, we use this technology so I can show you online, show you websites, incorporate a PowerPoint presentation, things like that. All right. So this is from the article from NPR.org. This is a picture from National Geographic. This is an African brother in South Africa. He's doing a dance. He may be Zulu. I'm not sure. He's doing a dance. And the caption says, South African gold miners were, quote, entranced by thundering drums, end quote, during vigorous tribal dances. A 1962 issue reported. 1962 issue of National Geographic reported. Okay, no talk about the apartheid system or the oppressive apartheid system that they're operating under, right? Okay. So, now then there's the way that, so the article goes on to say, then there's the way women of color were often depicted in the magazine. They were depicted as topless, bare-breasted. Professor George Mason, Professor John Edwin Mason, okay, professor of African-American history and photography at the University of Virginia, he said, quote, teenage boys could rely in the 1950s and 1960s on National Geographic to show them bare-breasted women as long as the women had brown or black skin. He said, I think the editors understood this was frankly a selling point to its male readers. Some of the bare-breasted young women are shot in a way that almost resembles glamour shots, end quote. So I can remember being in elementary school in Detroit, here in Detroit. I still live in Detroit. Just a second. This is apple cider vinegar because my allergy is flaring up a little bit. So I'm drinking some of this. Okay, so I can remember being in elementary school and in the library, they would have National Geographic magazine. And I can remember some of the boys turning to the pages of bare-breasted African women showing this, things like this, right? And I've heard people say that before Playboy magazine, you'd have boys and white boys, things like that, looking at National Geographic magazine because they would show bare-breasted women, largely, usually African women and brown skinned women, Hispanic, whatever, Native American, things like this. So he goes on to say, Professor Mason goes on to say, he says that the magazine has been dealing with its history implicitly for the last two or three decades. Now, they first started publishing in 1888. 13 years after slavery ended, 11 years after Reconstruction. And so slavery ends in 1865 with the 13th Amendment, not the Emancipation Proclamation, the 13th Amendment. 1877, you have a Reconstruction. 1888 is 8 years before Plessy versus Ferguson, which solidifies nationally Jim Crow laws. Was solidified Jim Crow law, separate but equal, right? So he says that the magazine has been dealing with this history implicitly for the last two or three decades. But what made this project different is that the editor, the new editor, Susan Goldberg, female, wanted to make reckoning explicit, wanted to make reckoning with the racist history of National Geographic explicit. Quote, that National Geographic should not do an issue on race without understanding its own complicity in shaping understandings of race and racial hierarchy, end quote. Now, here's another picture. Then we'll go to some of your comments, and I'll go back to this, okay? So here's another picture from issue of National Geographic magazine. And they show an African-American man who's a servant. Now, I'm not trying to demean African-Americans who are domestics, maids, butlers, things like that, or his. I'm not trying to demean them. I'm talking about the way they have been depicted, largely. Okay. Now, it says that the caption here, and you can't read it, so I'm going to read it to you. You pull up this article, you can read it. Although slave labor was used to build homes featured in a 1956 article, the writer contended that they, quote, stand for a chapter of this country's history every American is proud to remember, end quote. Okay. Although slave labor was used to build homes featured in a 1956 article, the writer contended that they, quote, stand for a chapter of this country's history every American is proud to remember. So the writer of the article back in 1956 was saying that those homes stand for a chapter of America's history that every American is proud to remember. Really? Did you ask some of the descendants of the enslaved Africans who built the home? What are you talking about? So this is the type of history that National Geographic has. I'm glad they finally came to acknowledge it. If you're looking for a curriculum for African-American children to teach them their history, then look no further than Legacy Kits by Ignis. Legacy Kits by Ignis is an African-American-owned business that provides African-American and African history curriculum for school-aged children. Their goal is to teach children about their strong history, which is not taught in schools across America. Legacy Kits provide a hands-on learning experience that children love. Each kit contains a workbook, two history books, and two projects. They make it easy for busy parents like you. Subscribe today to receive a monthly package filled with the rich heritage of African people. Teach your children about their history. For more information, and to sign up, visit Legacy Kits by Ignis, I-G-N-I-S, LegacyKitsByIgnis.com. Visit them today. Follow them on social media and sign up to receive their emails for special discounts. Remember, right knowledge corrects wrong behavior. Okay, so let's go to some of your comments, then we'll continue with the article, all right? Got Larry Hill. I thought they said Lauren Hill. I was about to say. All right. Hey, Larry. Ron Lewis, black folks was here long before anybody else was here. That's true. We've been here at least 51,700 years. The Khoisan have the oldest DNA on the planet. They come from Southern Africa. You had different groups of African people here. You have a Fulsom people who come here about 15,000, 16,000 years ago, another group of African people. Dr. Claude Anderson has talked about the Fulsom people. He talks about them in his book, Dirty Little Secrets about Black History, Volume 1. Folsom, Arizona is named after the Folsom people, F-O-L-S-O-M. Folsom Prison is named after them. We were here before Native Americans came into existence. Let's see. Who else we have here? Okay, we got Ron, Gunja, Mon from Mississippi. Vanessa said our knowledge has been used by others with no attribution to Kemet throughout history. Yeah, read Stolen Legacy by George G.M. James. Greek philosophy is stolen, ancient Egyptian philosophy, I think it's called Stolen Legacy by George G.M. James. Excellent, excellent book, which deals with a lot of this type of history. We got Kim on, Angela Flood Williams. Ron said in Africa, they finally going to take back the land from those white folks. Yeah, that's in South Africa. They're taking back the farmland from white South African farmers. They should take them back. They should take it back. Absolutely. It was stolen. It was stolen in the first place. So yes, they should take it back. All right. Okay, so let's continue here. Let's continue here with this article. And then also, yeah, I'm going to post the link again. You know, I'm doing the online lecture coming up this Saturday, March 31st, dealing with the film Black Panther. I'm excited about it. It's a lot of information. I've read about 100 articles dealing with the film Black Panther. Been studying it. So we're going to deal with we'll deal with the film. We'll deal with the themes in the film, messages, the African cultural relevance of the film, impact it's having around the world. It's a lot of information. Okay, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. It's $10 to register for the online lecture. It's not on Facebook. It's at an online school, the African History Network School. You'll be able to watch it over and over again also. We just posted a link there. And also, you go to AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, register there. And that link also has the information. You can register for our six-course online bundle pack, which includes my online course dealing with ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, understanding the transatlantic slave trade, what they didn't teach you in school. So six courses, including the Black Panther online lecture for $80, regularly $120, okay? We've got Sean. He said, hey, South Africa, better watch out for the UK. Ron said, read some Diop Civilization. Yeah, Dr. Shankar the Joke. Yep, Civilization and Barbarism. Okay, so let's continue here. Okay, so the article goes on to say, this is from National Public, NPR, National Public Radio. National Geographic reckons with its past for decades, our coverage was racist. For decades, our coverage was racist. Now, you've heard me talk about before how racism and white supremacy is a global system. White supremacy is a global system. National Geographic started publishing in 1888. Okay, National Geographic reaches 172 countries. 172 countries around the world, and is translated into 43 different languages each month. This has wide-ranging implications, okay? This shapes the way people think, feel, act, and behave. It shapes the way people think, feel, act, and behave. All right, now, for those of us who have spent long afternoons thumbing through old issues of National Geographic magazine and dreaming of far-off lands, Professor John Edwin Mason, wants to make clear that looking at foreign people and places isn't a bad thing. He said, quote, we're all curious and we all want to see. I'm not criticizing the idea of being curious about the world. He said, it's just the other messages that are sent. That is not just difference, but inferiority and superiority. It's just the other messages that are sent. That is not just difference, but inferiority and superiority. There's nothing wrong with being different. There's nothing wrong with showing different cultures, different ethnic groups, different races of people. There's nothing wrong with difference. But when you tacitly, subconsciously, overtly or covertly present the differences based upon a hierarchy, based upon superiority and inferiority, that's a problem. And that's what fuels the concept of racism and white supremacy. So where does the story publication go from here? The article goes on to ask. Now, one good step would be to invite the diverse contributors to the April 2018 issue to become part of the magazine's regular pool of writers and photographers, Professor John Edwin Mason suggests. Okay. He said, quote, still, it's too often a Westerner who is telling us about Africa or Asia or Latin America. Still, it's too often a Westerner, basically a white person, a European, is telling us about Africa or Asia or Latin America. He said, there are astonishing photographers from all over the world who have unique visions, not just of their own country, but who could bring a unique vision to photography, to a unique vision to photographing Cincinnati, Ohio, if it came to that. Now, he also notes that the magazine's images have so often captivated, even when they were stereotypical or skewed. He says that a number of African photographers have told him that it was magazines like National Geographic and Life magazine that turned them into, turned them onto photography in the first place. Sorry about that. I'm drinking some apple cider vinegar. Quote, they knew that there were problems with the way that they and their people were being represented, he said. And yet the photography was often spectacularly good. It was really inviting, and it carried this power. And as young people, these men and women said, I want to do that. I want to make pictures like that. All right. So this deals with the April 2018 issue of National Geographic, which is about race and them reckoning with their past of racism in the stories they cover, the pictures, etc. Here's one picture I want to show you. This is showing Aborigines from Australia. And we look at the caption. In the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com, they talk about this. And this says, the caption says, in a full issue article on Australia that ran in National Geographic in 1916, Aboriginal Australians were called quote unquote savages, who quote ranked lowest in intelligence of all human beings, end quote. The magazine examines its history of racist coverage in this April issue. Now, this was published in 1916 in National Geographic magazine. They were referred, these Aboriginal Australians were called savages, and they and it is said about them that they ranked lowest in intelligence of all human beings, end quote. And when you study the concept of race, which is a made-up concept, okay? When you study the concept of race, if you actually understand history, concept of race did not always exist. When you study the concept of race, what Carl von Linnaeus did was that he attached moral and ethical characteristics and attributes to the various races. And it was not based upon anything scientific, okay? This is something that Dr. Joy DeGruy talks about in post-traumatic slave syndrome. Post-traumatic slave syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy, okay? America's legacy of enduring injury and hearing, all right? Healing, I'm sorry. Healing, not hearing. Healing, okay? And she talks about this in pages 56 through about 60 or 62. And she talks about Dr. Carl von Linnaeus, who stratifies humanity into four races. You have Homo Americanus, who were depicted as reddish, being reddish, and the attributes were choleric, obstinate, contented, and regulated by customs. So he's basically talking about Native Americans. Homo Europaeus, these are Europeans. He said they were fickle, sanguine, blue-eyed, gentle, and governed by laws. Homo Asiaticus, talking about Asians, depicted them as sallow, grave, dignified, avaricious, and ruled by opinion. And Homo Afer, A-F-E-R, Homo Afer, referring to African people. They were phlegmatic, cunning, lazy, lustful, careless, and governed by caprice. These are attributes associated with various races. No scientific evidence to back up these attributes, But then these become ingrained in the culture as stereotypes of these various races of people. Okay. And this was and Carl von Linnaeus began he also began the science of anthropology. He's known as the father of modern taxonomy. We study Carl von Linnaeus in biology class when we deal with the class order, the kingdom, the gene, the phylum, the genus, I should say, species, things like this. That order, the classification of living things, that comes from Carl von Linnaeus. So we study him when we study biology, okay? And Linnaeus began the science of anthropology and laid the foundation of 19th century beliefs about race that resulted in racism as well, okay? All right, so check out Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy. This is one of the books we use in the online class as well. You don't have to buy any of these books for the online class purposes, but you want to have these for your own personal library. All right. So this is what they said about Aboriginal Australians. Okay. So Angela said, whites poisoned the Aboriginal people, watering holes, forcibly removed their children, sterilization of women. Larry Hill said they burnt our books here. Ron said they are the keepers of a vast amount of knowledge from the old times, and they're under siege by the white folks. AO said got the book. All right. Okay. All right, so let's continue here. Okay, so that was an article from National Public Radio. Now, in the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com called National Geographic Admits to Generations of Racist Journalism from March 13th, they say that, for example, in a 1916 article about Australia, the caption on a photo of two Aboriginal people read South Australian blackfellows. These savages rank lowest in intelligence of all human beings. Okay. And let me see, was there anything else from that article? Now, National Geographic was one of the first advocates of using color photography in its pages, and is well known for its coverage of history, science, environmentalism, and the far corners of the world. It currently can be found in 172 countries and 43 languages every month. That's a huge reach. That's a huge reach. All right. So how's everybody doing today? Share this broadcast on your own Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in also. As well. And I'm gonna post the link again here. So you know I teach online classes as well, online courses. We have one coming up this Saturday, March 31st, dealing with the film Black Panther, dealing with different themes covered in the film, deal with the African cultural influence, we deal with African history, we deal with some history of the Black Panther comic book as well. Another online course that I teach is called Ancient Kemet, the Moors and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. Ancient Kemet, the Moors and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. Okay, and that is a 7-session, 14-hour online class that I teach. It's all on demand. So as soon as you register, you can start watching it. And there's 20 hours of bonus content also. So you can buy the classes individually, the courses individually, or you get them in a bundle pack. And we have the bundle pack is $80. It's six courses in the online bundle pack. So we just posted the link there. You can register for that. And then also you can go to AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com as well, It's right on the homepage, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. All right. Okay, so let me show you some things quickly, and then we'll get out of here. So some of the things we'll deal with, many of you have seen the film Black Panther. I've seen a lot of people's comments on social media, and I could tell a lot of people have never read the Black Panther comic book. To understand the film, you have to understand history of the Black Panther character, the comic book, things like this. These are some of the things that we'll talk about in Saturday's presentation, okay? So the Black Panther character, the Black Panther character was first introduced in the Fantastic Four comic book in 1966, July 1966, volume one, issue 52. And he was billed as the Sensational Black Panther. All right. Now, this was the first African superhero from a major mainstream comic book publishing company. Okay. Black Panther. He was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, 1966. Contrary to popular belief, this was not a copy of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. They're not organized until they don't form until October 16th, 1966 in Oakland, California, by Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale. Okay, this comes out before then. But this was phenomenal because we never saw an African superhero before. Now, what's interesting about this is that in the first, in this introductory issue, and it's a two-part, it was a two-part story, issue 52 and issue 53, the Black Panther single-handedly defeats the Fantastic Four in their own comic book. We never saw anything like this before. He single-handedly defeated them. And when you study the Black Panther, not only does he have superhuman strength, cat-like reflexes, things like this, like a panther, he's also a master of armed combat, different forms of armed combat. Okay? So he defeats the Fantastic Four. So you have periods of time, at one point they show him with a half mask. So you see he's African. Other points, they show him with the full mask. But they take you into this fictitious African nation called Wakanda. Now, what a lot of people don't know, and this is something we'll talk about Saturday, is that Wakanda is not a made-up word. Wakanda is in Native American languages, like the Sioux Indian language, S-I-O-U-X, the Sioux Native American language. It's in the Omaha Ponca Native American language as well. It means possesses secret powers. It's not a made-up word. You have schools in this country called Wakanda in Wisconsin. There is a water park called Wakanda, W-A-K-A-N-D-A. I know because I went to that website. I went and researched this stuff. So the word Wakanda is not made up. It's also an African word in the Bantu language as well. It's not made up. Now, I don't know the level of knowledge that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby had of the term Wakanda or the word Wakanda, but I don't think it's something they just pulled out of the sky. So even though this is fiction, you still see references to African history, African culture, and culture relates to history as well. So you have a lot of people who criticize the film and say this is fiction. We don't need to see a fictitious film to learn about African history. We don't need a fictitious film for this and that, right? Usually these are people that don't study African history, because usually people who really study African history, they see this incorporated and they understand how this has captured the minds and opened up the minds of many of our people who want to then learn about the history from those who teach it. See, and real teachers teach and hate is hate. Real teachers teach and hate is hate. Okay. So if we look at, for instance, you had an African-American girl who grew up on the south side of Chicago, And oftentimes at night, she would lay on the grass and look up at the stars and dream about going into outer space. Dream about what's up there. And she would watch a TV show every week called Star Trek. And on the TV show, they had an African-American character named Lieutenant Uhuru, played by Nichelle Nichols. Now, this was fictitious. But this fictitious character inspired this sister so much that she wanted to become an astronaut. And her name is Dr. Macy Jemison, the first African-American female astronaut to go into outer space. And I have her own video talking about the impact that this fictitious TV show that she saw every week had on the trajectory of her life. Nichelle Nichols, at one point, wanted to quit the show. She wrote a letter to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talking about wanting to quit the show. He wrote a letter back to her. He said, don't quit the show. He said, if you quit the show, they're going to replace you with a blonde-haired white woman. But he said, African-American children need to see you doing what you're doing in outer space. So we have to understand the power of image. Your thoughts create feelings. Your feelings create actions and behaviors. Your actions and behaviors create results. We have to understand the power of image. And even though you have a fictitious movie, you have a fictitious TV show, oftentimes there are real cultural infusions into it, real cultural relevance, and a historical relevance as well. You'll see references to Huey P. Newton in the film. You see the film opens up in Oakland, California, and it ends in Oakland, California. You see that Wakanda is an African nation, even though it's fictitious, never conquered by Europeans, never colonized by Europeans. Well, that's Ethiopia, even though, early March, we celebrated the 122nd anniversary of the Battle of Adwa of 1896, where the Ethiopians under Emperor Menelik II, King Menelik II, defeated the Italians who were trying to invade. Ethiopia was never conquered by Europeans. Okay? So real teachers teach why hate is hate. Real teachers understand how to take something that may be fictitious, but understand the real cultural relevancy in what's fictitious. Now, and this movie has become the most successful superhero movie at the box office. It's done over $1.3 trillion. Right? So this is huge. It's having an impact across the country. It's having an impact around the world. One of the things we'll talk about is the Afro-Brazilian Black Money movement that has spurred from the film Black Panther. So this is having an impact internationally. We saw in China, opening weekend, it is $63 million in China. The film is going to change the trajectory of other films we see telling African-American stories. Because unfortunately, a lot of the films we've seen in the past of African-Americans, you're either a slave, a servant, or a stereotype. A slave, a servant, or a stereotype. The Help, 12 Years a Slave, Django. This is totally changing the trajectory of this. So one of the things we'll talk about, and it's a lot. I'm still putting everything together. The research is done. Now it's putting everything into the presentation for my research. Ain't no more research I have to do. Research is done. This is one of them right here. This is the book I ordered. This deals with the previous 52 years of history of the Black Panther comic book. You have to understand the comic book and the characters in the comic book to understand the movie. So I hear people making comics about why they had these white people in the movie, blah, 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 but they're in the comic book. What are you talking about? You have to understand the comic. If you go see a movie about a comic book, you need to understand the comic book to understand the movie. A lot of people don't understand this. So you have to understand the history of the comic book and of the characters to understand the movie. So one of the things we'll talk about are the Dora Milaje, right? From Wakanda. So the Dora Milaje are the African female warriors that protect King T'Challa, who's the Black Panther played by Chadwick Boseman. But it's largely believed, and I think they're correct, that they are actually based upon real African female warriors from Dahomey in West Africa, among the Fo people, which is today present day Benin. They were referred to as Amazon warriors, or the Amazon Dahomeyan warriors, also called the Ahosi, which means the king's wives, also called the Mino, M-I-N-O. These were African female warriors from the 17th century to the 19th century. And they fought along African male warriors during the Franco-Dahomeyan Wars of Franco-Dahomeyan War of 1890. Okay? And these were fierce female warriors who were known to decapitate their enemy in battle. So even though this is a fictitious African nation and a fictitious movie, there's still real African cultural relevance, real African cultural influence there, and historical influence also. So these are some of this is a sample of some of the things that we deal with. And I hear people talking about the movie, and usually I can tell like the intelligence level and the knowledge of African history, because this is a powerful movie. I heard Tony Browder talk about this. I talked to Professor Kaba Kamenei, one of my teachers, about this. I talked to Kalindi E. Kalindi's one of my teachers also. Kalindi's brilliant. Kalindi, you may have heard some of my interviews with Kalindi. Kalindi is a master of African martial arts, but he's an African historian as well. He's been all throughout Africa. Okay? And we talked about this, man. He said, you know, people take 5% of the movie that they have a problem with and blow that up, as opposed to focusing on the 95% of the movie that's good. And I talked to African-American youth. They're blown away by this movie. Their minds are open. They want to learn about the history. I just did a presentation for a mentoring group on Wednesday. Tuesday, because today's Thursday. Tuesday. And there was an 11th grader there. And I dealt with great African women in history, the mothers of civilization. And I had this slide in here dealing with the Dora Milaje, because I was talking about the Mino, these African female warriors. And most people don't know this is based upon real history. Right? Okay, so we're going to post the link again here. You can register for the online class. It's Saturday, March 31st. Saturday, March 31st, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. If you miss it, it'll be on demand. You can go back and watch it over and over and over again. If you go to a lecture, right, you pay the $10, $15, you watch it once, it's over. This here, you can watch live, you can ask questions, you can watch from around the world, then it'll be on demand, you can watch over and over again. This is what we do at our online school, okay? Also, we have, it's $10. It's $10 for the class. And, you know, that helps because I got to pay for the online format. I was just talking to them yesterday because I just paid the monthly fee. And I was talking about some other charges that I don't even understand. I'm like, dude, I'm like, what the hell is this? But then also we have, you can register for the 6-course online bundle pack. 5 of the courses are on demand. And the 6th one is the one on Black Panther. And that's $80, and it's regularly $120. We'll post that again. It's all at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can click on the links I'm posting here, but you can also go to AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, and the information is there as well. Okay. If you're looking for a curriculum for African American children to teach them their history, then look no further than Legacy Kits by Ignis. Legacy Kits by Ignis is an African American-owned business that provides African American and African history curriculum for school-age children. Their goal is to teach children about their strong history, which is not taught in schools across America. Legacy Kits provide a hands-on learning experience that children love. Each kit contains a workbook, two history books, and two projects. They make it easy for busy parents like you. Subscribe today to receive a monthly package filled with the rich heritage of African people. Teach your children about their history. For more information and to sign up, visit Legacy Kits by Ignis, Ignis, LegacyKitsByIgnis.com. Visit them today. Follow them on social media and sign up to receive their emails for special discounts. Remember, right knowledge corrects wrong behavior. All right. So these are just some of the things we'll talk about on Saturday, March 31st. All right. And then if I do any more, oh, so when you register for the Black Panther one, as soon as you register, there's a video. It's about an hour and a half of me talking about some things about the Black Panther. So it'll give you an intro. So as soon as you register, you can start watching that as well. Okay. Now, when we look at understand, when we look at the most intense, extensive online course that I teach, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. That's in the bundle pack. And you know what? Let me backtrack for a minute. Let me show you something here. Do I have it here? Where is this? Just a second. Let me show you. Oh, right here. Show you this here. Okay. If you want to know what are the other six courses in the bundle pack, it says March 24th, but it's March 31st. It was originally March 24th. Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach in school, the Black Panther online lecture, Great African Women, the History of the Mothers of Civilization, African American Resistance in the Era of Donald Trump, Voter Suppression, Reparations, and How Elections Have Consequences, How Richard Nixon's War on Drugs Was a War on the African American Community, and Empire Strikes Black. So those are Empire Strikes Black, the propaganda of the media. So those are the six online courses in that six course bundle pack. All right, that's the best value. Okay, so when we look at somebody posted, who was it? Larry, I think it was Larry. He said, we've been here for a long time or something like this. And you heard me talk about the term Wakanda, right? That's in some Native American languages. Well, we know the first Americans were Africans. The first Americans were Africans. As you heard me say earlier, even though August 20th, 1619, Jamestown, Virginia did happen, that's not when African people first came to this land we call the United States of America. Even if you go back 100 years before that, in the territory we call South Carolina, the Spanish were taking Africans into that territory in the 1520s. That's 100 years before that. But the way that I deal with the transatlantic slave trade, see, unfortunately, a lot of people, and when I was taking my Africana studies classes at Wayne State University, unfortunately, they want to start in the 1500s. Well, they may start in the 1440s with the Portuguese selling around the west coast of Africa. But the way I teach, and the way people like Professor Kaba Kamane and others taught me, is that Professor Kaba says to understand the existence of something, you first must understand the pre-existence of existence. So when I was trying to figure out the missing link and what caused the transatlantic slave trade to happen, and I'm trying to figure out how do we go from pyramids to being a slave, you have to understand the 800-year occupation of Europe by the Africans known as the Moors. Because the Moors take the teachings from ancient Kemet into Europe and bring Europeans out of the Dark Ages. But when I teach, I don't deal with 500 years of history or 1,500 years. We deal with at least 50,000 years of history. So when we look at Dr. David Imhotep, and he's a friend of mine, I've interviewed him about 11 times. If you go to AfricanHistoryNetwork.com and right on the homepage, click on listen to podcasts of Michael Imhotep. You can listen to some of the interviews I've done with him. We have about 824 audio podcasts there. They're all free to listen to. Okay. The online school, we definitely have to charge for that because they're kicking my behind. I got to pay for that each month. And they're kicking my behind with how much I have to pay for the online school. And also, I got to pay for each course that I sell. Also, I was just emailing them back and forth, dealing with the cost, because I'm like, dude, why are you charging me so much when I sell a bundle pack? I don't understand this. But let's continue. Those are my problems. All right. Page 14 of his book. And when I deal with him, when I go speak to groups and things like this, this type of information blows them away. So he deals with a discovery made by Dr. Albert Goodyear of the University of South Carolina, who's an archaeologist at the University of South Carolina. He's not the janitor at the University of South Carolina. He's an archaeologist, right? He's a professor. 2004 in Allendale County, South Carolina. They found evidence of an African presence going back at least 51,700 years. These are of the Khoisan, the short stature people from Southern Africa. They go all around the world. They're the ancestors to the Ainu and the Twa. They found artifacts, architectures, campsites, carvings, Egyptian writings, footprints in lava, genetic M174D haploid groups dealing with DNA and genetics, linguistics, paintings, skulls, skeletons, structures, and tools. They found overwhelming evidence documenting an African presence. Now, what happens is mainstream archaeology challenges this and tries to suppress it. There have been other discoveries, and one of the things we do in the online course dealing with understanding the transatlantic slave trade, we deal with some of the recent archaeological discoveries, like the one that came out of Morocco in June or July 2017, where they found skeletons of Homo sapiens, modern man, that date back 300,000 to 350,000 years ago. Well, this is when you read articles about this, and all when these discoveries take place, all the major news outlets have articles about it. New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, CNN, NBC, they all have articles about this. National Geographic, Discovery Channel, Discovery Channel's website, their news website, they all have articles about this stuff. And it says that these type of discoveries are totally causing the archaeologists and the scientists and the paleontologists to rethink everything. The discovery of 300,000 to 350,000 years ago made in Morocco in the summer of 2017, those skeletons are at least 100,000 years older than the oldest human remains of Homo sapiens that were found in Ethiopia that date back about 198,000 years ago. And when you read articles about this, they're saying, well, wait a second. They're saying we have to rethink the migration of African people. They said people may have migrated. Apparently, people migrated much earlier than we thought that they did. So the deeper they dig, the blacker the planet gets. The more research they do, the older we get, because they keep having to push dates back. When these discoveries come out, they keep having to push the dates back. So Juvenile had a song in 1998 called Back That Thing Up. They keep having to back that thing up when the hard evidence comes out. Now, here's Dr. Albert Goodyear, archaeologist at the University of South Carolina. Now, this is an article from a scientific website called ScienceDaily.com. This is not InfoWars. This is ScienceDaily.com. This article is from November 18, 2004, 14 years ago. New evidence puts man in North America 50,000 years ago. New evidence puts man in North America 50,000 years ago. So this is why when I teach about the transatlantic slave trade, we can't deal with 500 years. We can't deal with 246 years of slavery. I deal with things chronologically as much as possible. And we have to deal with at least 50,000 years of history, but we go back even before then, looking at these archaeological discoveries and trying to deal with things chronologically and understanding how a sequence of historical events lead up to a much larger event taking place. So here's a summary of what the article says. Now, this is not my summary. This is the summary that ScienceDaily.com says that the article and the discovery represent. It says radiocarbon tests of carbonized plant remains, where artifacts were unearthed last May along the Savannah River in Allendale County by University of South Carolina archaeologist Dr. Albert Goodyear, indicate that the sediments containing these artifacts are at least 50,000 years old, meaning that humans inhabited North America long before the last ice age. These are not my conclusions, these are theirs. Okay? So we have to deal with these archaeological discoveries. We talk a little bit about St. Patrick's Day and the Druids, because this deals with an African influence, information coming out of ancient Kemet, and the Druids who were in Ireland. And Druid in Old Ireland, in Old Irish, means he who knows, dealing with a watered down version of teachings coming out of ancient Kemet. And this is going to lead to Patrick, a British slave, being sent into Ireland in 432 AD by Pope Celestine I to convert the Irish to Christianity. Okay. At this time, the Catholic Church doesn't exist. Catholic Church doesn't come into existence until 11th century AD. But he's going to kill off a lot of the Druids and the Irish people and convert them to Christianity. And people celebrate March 17th. They celebrate a mass murderer named Patrick, who was a mass murderer on behalf of the Christian church. So this caption here deals with African Americans who celebrate St. Patrick's Day. We know early this month was St. Patrick's Day. Some of you all saw my broadcast dealing with that, dealing with St. Patrick's Day and why St. Patrick's Day is not for African Americans. Now, you can do what you want to do. I'm dealing with the history, okay? I'm dealing with the history. And it says, I hope for the day I see Black folks this prideful about their own history, fixing our own problems and unifying for a Black agenda. Okay. And you've heard me say before, if you read green on St. Patrick's Day, will you red, black, and green on African Liberation Day? If you wear green on St. Patrick's Day, will you wear red, black, and green on African Liberation Day, which is May 25th? If not, why not? So we talk about the lost city of Egypt, Thomas Heraclion, swallowed by the sea 1,200 years ago. This information came out, the discovery was revealed in 2013, lost city of Egypt. And then, let's see here, let me get to the synopsis. So, of course, we have to talk about the Moors. You can't talk about the transatlantic slave trade while dealing with the 800-year occupation of Europe by the Africans known as the Moors, and what the Moors take into Europe, the science, the algebra, the spherical globes, the almanacs, the chemistry. They introduced something called alchemy, which today we call chemistry, different types of foods, different types of musical instruments, all different types of things like this. The Moors take into Europe, and it saves Europe. When they go in, about 90% of the European population is illiterate. The teachings they take in are going to be learned, a portion of the teachings are going to be learned by a group formed in 1118 AD during the Second Crusades. They call themselves the Poor Knights of Christ, who become known as the Knights Templar. And when the Knights Templar are disbanded, and you have a group disbanded in France, October 13th, October 13th, I forgot the year, it just slipped my mind. But they around 1310, 1308, 1310, October 13th, which was a Friday. This was said to be the day that the knowledge stopped. This is one of the reasons why Friday the 13th is looked at as an unlucky number, because this was the day, unlucky day, because this was the day, this was said to be the day that the knowledge stopped. They rounded up, disbanded. When we go back and look at this right here, this term at the bottom, called frigatriskaidekaphobia, deals with the fear of Friday the 13th, frigatriskaidekaphobia. Frigga, or Freya, or Freya, was the wife of Odin in Scandinavian mythology. The day of the week, Friday, is named after Freya, or Freya, or Frigga, the wife of Odin. Wednesday used to be called Woden's Day or Odin's Day. Thursday was called Thor's Day. So when you study the etymology of words, it takes you back to history. And when you study the origins of the days of the weeks, it takes you into Scandinavian mythology. Some of the days of the week, take you into Scandinavian mythology. But frigatriskaidekaphobia deals with the fear of Friday the 13th. And part of that fear comes from what happened October 13th, okay, about 1310, Friday the 13th, with the Knights Templar being disbanded, and this was said to be the day the knowledge stopped. Now, when they're disbanded, those teachings are going to go underground. And they resurface as the Scottish Rites of the Freemasons. They resurface as the Rosicrucians, things like this. These various secret societies, or some people call them societies or secrets. Because Freemasons today, they ain't a secret. Now, some of the things they teach are secrets. But people will tell you, I'm a Freemason. They don't hide it. Secret societies are societies where people don't tell you they are a member of it. Those are secret societies. See, people call them, oh, those are secret societies. No, those are societies with secrets. They wear medallions. They say Freemason. They wear a ring. You see medallions on their cars. People that are part of secret societies don't do that. They don't tell you they are a member. Now, what happens, just like fraternities and sororities, people call them, see, there ain't some secret societies. Those are societies with secrets. I've been in a fraternity 28 years. There ain't no secret society. You know, they tell you they're a member. They invite you to their events. I mean, come on. Get the hell out of here with this nonsense. All right. Okay, so now, when you have the founding fathers, 50 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons. And we know the layout of Washington, D.C. is based upon ancient African principles. And based upon the layout of Washington, D.C. and ancient African principles. This is how you get something like this. So the Washington Monument, named after George Washington, 555 feet, is a tekken, an ancient African symbol of resurrection, coming from the story of Osar, Aset, and Heru. Set in Heru, who the Greeks called Osiris, Isis, and Horus. And there were about 1,200 tekenu for plural, all throughout Africa, through Egypt, basically, Egypt. Kemet, one of the original names for Egypt, meaning the land of the blacks. There are about 12 left today. They've been either destroyed or taken to other parts of the world, Istanbul, Turkey, Paris, France, Vatican City, things like this. They're always stealing our stuff, okay? So what happens is, when you look at Freemasonry, these are all some things we deal with in the online course, understand the transatlantic slave trade, what they didn't teach in school, because I'm dealing with a chronology of history leading up to the transatlantic slave trade happening. The word Mason is derived from the Latin words mass and sun. And Mason means child of light and expresses the desire to pursue light, which is a metaphor for the sun, which symbolizes knowledge. And the term child of light or sons and daughters of light, because we taught African women as well, was first used to identify students who had completed 42 years of study in the temples of ancient Kemet. Many Masonic temples were modeled after the temples of Kemet, places where light and knowledge was imparted in a series of steps or degrees. This is why when you go to college, you get your credentials in a series of degrees. Okay? You get your credentials in a series of degrees because when you study the origins of the liberal arts, they come from the teachings in ancient Kemet, the liberal arts, the trivium and the quadrivium, the seven liberal arts that they were studying in these temples. All right. And let me see. I have the, which one is it? I have the information on the Knights Templar. I wanted to look that up to get that year. Because it was 1310, one of the articles I had on them disbanded in France. We do with that in the class also. Just trying to find this. 1307, there we go. On Friday the 13th, Friday, October 13th, 1307, scores of French Templars were arrested, including the Order's Grand Master, Jacques de Molay. I knew it was around that time, 1308, 1307, there we go. All right. Okay, so this is some type of information we deal with. And then, so we deal with, you know, what was the transatlantic slave trade? When did it start? Things like this, the Arab slave trade of African people. Where is my overview? We deal with the fake Willie Lynch letter of 1712. Willie Lynch never historically existed. We need to throw that in the garbage can, okay? And once again, we'll post a link here once again. You can register for this online course. You can register for the Black Panther lecture as well, Black Panther online course. We have a 6-course bundle pack. Only $80 to get five courses on demand, plus the Black Panther, which is live. Once that's over, that'll be on demand. You can go back and watch it over and over again as well. You can register for these individually also. The Black Panther online course is $10, taking place Saturday, March 31st, 2018, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can watch all around the world. You can also go to AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Got the information there. You can register there. What we do, what was the transatlantic slave trade? What were some of the events that led to the starting? What role did Christopher Columbus play? Columbus was crucial in the transatlantic slave trade spreading. And also, Columbus never came to this land we call the United States of America. So we need to stop lying to our children, telling them that Columbus discovered America. Okay. Closest he came here was Cuba, which is 90 miles away. At least 70% of the people he came in contact with on his four voyages were African people. Did Africans sell themselves into slavery? When African people in America, were there African people in America before slavery? We deal with all of that as well. So it's a lot of history. The 800-year occupation of Europe by the Africans known as the Moors, archaeological discoveries, the role insurance companies played, Freemasonry, origins of the term America and Africa, the problem with slave movies, linked to ancient Kemet and Egypt, Frank Willie Lynch letter. It's a lot of stuff we deal with, okay? All right. So look, we're going to get out of here, register for the online courses, and share this broadcast on your own Facebook page. Also, visit AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. And remember, at the African History Network, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right now it's correct wrong behavior. What you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you is based upon what you think about yourself. Remember, it's not over till we win. Right now it's correct wrong behavior. Wakanda forever. We'll talk to you next time. Peace.